just check the total wreck of flop.
All right, welcome. I'd like to call the meeting to order for the Goleta Planning Commission for today, June 22nd, 2015. And let's start off with a Pledge of Allegiance. Please all stand and join me. Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you very much. Madam Secretary, can you do the roll call for us?
Chair. Chair Onan.
Here.
Vice Chair Jenkins.
Here.
Commissioner Daniels.
Present.
Commissioner Fuller.
Present.
Commissioner Maynard.
Present.
Thank you.
Thank you. So at this time, we have what's called public forum. So anyone is allowed to speak on any subject that the city of Goleta has jurisdiction over that is not on tonight's agenda. Madam Clerk, I don't see any speaker slips for the public forum.
No.
So without any, we're going to open and close the public forum, and we'll move on to see if there's any amendments or adjustments to our agenda.
There are not.
All right. So item number one is the approval of the Planning Commission meeting minutes for May 11, 2015. Do we have any discussion, corrections, or motions?
I move to approve.
We have a motion to approve.
I'll second that motion.
We have a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It looks like that's unanimous. Let's go on to our public hearing. So we'll open the public hearing and we'll have a reading of the item by our clerk.
Thank you. Item B1 is a public hearing. It's on the addition of a Verizon wireless cellular antenna to an existing utility pole located on the south side of Cathedral Oaks Road, east of Alameda Avenue, adjacent to Dos Pueblos High School. APN is within a right-of-way. It's a case number 15-049 CUP.
Thank you. Staff presentation? Ms. Carmen, will that be you? Or who will it be?
No, it will not. It will be our assistant planner, Joe Pearson.
Joe, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon or good evening, Chair Onan and commissioners. Today we have a request for a conditional use permit for a new Verizon Wireless utility pole cell sites. The project is located within the city right-of-way on the south side of Cathedral Oaks Road between Alameda Avenue and Glen Annie Road. The pole is along Dos Pueblos High School's frontage on Cathedral Oaks Road near the road to the baseball fields. The antenna will be located on an existing 39-foot tall utility pole, which was placed by Southern California Edison. A little bit of background. All telecommunication facilities are subject to the telecommunication regulations. In regard to this project, a CUP is required for the installation and operation of a wireless cell site on an existing utility pole when the antenna and associated equipment will exceed 1.5 cubic feet of area. And under the California Public Utilities Code, Verizon Wireless has a statewide franchise to place telephone equipment within the public right-of-way, so they would not need a separate franchise with the city. However, they will be required to obtain an encroachment permit prior to any work taking place. A brief description: the proposed cell site consists of an antenna and associated equipment on an existing SC utility pole to be placed a minimum of 8 feet above finished grade. The applicant also proposes to install a new pole box and 4 foot high ground mounted electrical meter pedestal. And then the power for the new site will be provided from existing electrical lines. As shown in the photo simulation, the equipment on the pole will be painted brown to blend in with the existing pole, and the ground mounted equipment will be painted green and partially screened by drought tolerant landscaping as required by DRB's comments at conceptual review. Looking at general plan consistency, the general plan has three primary goals in regard to telecommunication facilities in the city, which are ensuring compliance with development standards to prevent or minimize environmental impacts on visual resources, minimizing the need for new separate facilities, and improving cellular service in the city, all of which this project accomplishes. The project will be primarily improving capacity to Dos Pueblos High School, which is why it's located nearby. The project complies with all applicable requirements of the city's telecommunication ordinance, as outlined in the zoning consistency attachment of the staff report. And the project will be subject to all applicable post-development requirements per the city's ordinance, which include emissions compliance, continued compliance with development standards, and aesthetic compatibility. The project is exempt from further review under CEQA, and the city will issue a notice of exemption under CEQA guidelines sections 15301B for minor alterations to existing utilities and utilities to provide public services, and 15301D, new construction of small utilities, as the proposal only involved minor alterations to the existing utility pole site and construction of a small antenna. So staff's recommendation is to adopt the resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta approving the conditional use permit for the Verizon Wireless Utility Pole cell site located within the Cathedral Oaks Street right-of-way between Alameda Avenue and Glen Annie Road. And that's all for my presentation, and I'm available if you have any questions. Also, the applicant, Karina Arvizu, is here if you guys have any questions for her as well.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Well done. I'd like to go to the, see if there's any public comment, and then we'll come back to the commission. So at this point, I have received no speaker slip from the public for anyone liking to speak on this item. Madam Clerk, do we have any?
No, I've received no speaker slips.
Okay. So let's come back to the commission. Do we have any disclosures or anything that anyone needs to do at this time? I don't see anything. No conflicts of interest associated with this. So let's go to the commission. If we have any questions of staff that you would like to get answered, and then we'll go to deliberations. Anyone have questions for staff? Seeing none, we are now in the deliberation phase. So any comments or concerns that the commission would like to talk about? If not, I will certainly entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt Planning Commission Resolution 15, next in line, Attachment 1, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, approving the conditional use permit for the Verizon Wireless Utility Pole cell site, Dos Pueblos HSSC1, located within the Cathedral Oaks Road Street right-of-way between Alameda Avenue and Glen Annie Road, case number 15-049-CUP. APN is not applicable.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Do we have a second?
I would second that motion.
All right. We have a first or second. One more time, go through the commission to see if there's any comments. None. I'm going to call for the vote. Are we ready? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Unanimous. Thank you very much. All right.
Good job, Joe.
Thank you.
So we're going to move on to item C, the local plant coastal program update. We'll call it. So we're ready for that when staff is ready to go.
Good afternoon, or good evening, Chair Onan and Commissioners.
Tonight, we are giving you another update on our local coastal program because we've had some developments and want to keep you informed as we move through the process as we're consulting with the Coastal Commission. So we're just going to, I'm going to run through the agenda and just kind of give you some highlights that were pointed out in our staff report just to guide you in. So this is an interactive presentation. Ask your questions. It is a discussion action item, but it's equally a presentation. Just we wanted to make sure that if you had questions, the full scope of your questions can be presented. But what we're going to talk about is some changes coming out of the Coastal Commission. Even though it's a draft sea level rise guidance document, they use it actively when they go through the consultation process, when they look at your regulations and your general plan. So we wanted to make sure you are aware of that. And then we've also had a change in our local coastal program schedule because that schedule is largely driven by this pretty decent sized grant that we got with the state. So they essentially added 6 months on, but we'll talk a little bit about that and what that means. And then the climate adaptation study is another more new development because we are taking the next step in better understanding what our resources are in the coastal zone and outside of the coastal zone. So we're looking at the full influence area of climate change and sea level rise over time. And so we wanted to talk to you about that and give you an update as to kind of what that study is and then what the inputs are for the model, because those are some critical pieces because they drive a lot of policy and regulations as it relates to adaptation. So looking at our future and how we may want to best write our policy and our regulations so that they can be adapted over time to address what's being forecasted by our model. And then just some next steps so that you can see what we're doing with our fiscal impact studies, because we listen to you guys and we try to be responsive. And then some adaptation strategies and then our regulatory plan, which and I'm going to turn the presentation over to the project manager for the local coastal program, which takes up, you know, the majority of her time because it's a lot of work and lots of work from the Coastal Commission, too. So there's been a lot of meetings and discussions to better understand the Coastal Act and what the Coastal Commission is going to expect. So Chandra Slavin will lead you in. Here you go.
Good evening, Chair and fellow commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to present this evening to you about all this exciting work. I must admit, I just love coming here and talking to you guys about it, so this is going to be fun. So let's talk about the first item, which is the updated sea level rise draft guidance, which I know is quite a mouthful, but they had a draft guidance, and now this is like the second draft guidance. So it was done back in 2013, and it was really kind of the first foray for the California Coastal Commission to start looking at sea level rise. And, you know, a lot was known and a lot was unknown. So we'll fast forward a couple years, and we're now in mid-2015, and they got over 300 pages of comments on that last document. Can only imagine having to respond to that, but they did it and I read it. So because of that and a lot of great modeling and other work, they've now updated this document, they being Coastal Commission staff, and they're looking to finalize it, which we in the, you know, climate change, climate adaptation, sea level rise community are thrilled, because we're looking to kind of get some closure on this and have some clear guidance on how to go forward. So we're really close. They're expecting comments July 10th, which would be less than a month from now, and then hope to finalize it and then present to the Coastal Commission themselves later this fall and then be done. So let's talk about some of the changes that have happened. First of all, it's more of a kind of scenario-based analysis, and I'll talk more about that when we get to our vulnerability study, but various different scenarios of low, medium, high, you know, good, bad, and worse kind of things, looking at sea level rise. And they do recommend, of course, using the best available science, which was, they're still using, going back to 2012. But they do make some notations to some of the more current models, which is good. I'll talk about that in a sec. And then really drawing the correlation between how storms, surges, and extreme events are more closely tied to sea level rise. Again, a lot of this wasn't for sure a couple years ago, but now because of what happened, like say March of 2014, which we know here locally what happened, and other incidents up and down the coast, now there's that stronger correlation. There's a better correlation between actual sea level rise adaptation planning and environmental justice, and really looking at those portions of the population that are more vulnerable to flooding, to sea level rise, and so on. You know, a lot of the coast, yes, has more well-to-do people, you know, like Malibu and other places, but there are other areas that don't. Imperial Beach, certain portions of different cities that are looking at that, and how do you plan for those more socially vulnerable populations? So they discuss more of that in this document. There's also a revised chapter on actual adaptation strategies, including a number of new strategies that have actually been put into practice over the last couple of years. So that was really helpful too. And more importantly, there was an entirely new chapter on the legal context of climate adaptation planning, which was extremely helpful. This was one of the largest comments from all of us, is how are we going to look at property takings, the public trust doctrine, all these legal issues, and how does that come into play with the Coastal Commission and the Coastal Zone and different jurisdictional boundaries? So they actually added a chapter on that. It also accounts for recent developments in both state and federal actions. So there's a number of them. Obviously, the most recent IPCC fifth assessment report, different executive orders from the governor. Obviously, just a lot has happened in the last couple years. I mean, legislation's moving quickly, as I'm sure you all know. And then really more specific information to the Coastal Act and more guidance for local governments related to local coastal programs. So all really good stuff. So as far as our comments, I just want to first alert you that anyone can comment on the document. It's a public document, and they're due July 10th. In our opinion, we really believe that this provides a good starting point for additional planning on the topic of different forms of adaptation strategies. Also, something to note that Coastal Commission staff utilizes this document pretty heavily as more of a regulatory tool than per se just guidance, something to keep in mind. And the quantitative, and again, this is just our staff comments that we're still formalizing, we're not finished yet. The quantitative hazard mapping is still presented at a fairly high level. We're looking more in terms of like, well, what kind of scale, what kind of sector, so on. And so they don't, in our opinion, give that specific of a guidance. On one hand, that's good because it lets local governments be flexible in the type of hazard tools they want to use. But on the other hand, it could be problematic in terms of promoting consistency in hazard modeling. For example, some local governments may use a, you know, not as fine grade hazard mapping or modeling, so they may get different results than, say, their next door neighbors who use a different modeling approach. So as a planner, I'm just a big believer on whatever we decide, it just needs to be consistent across counties, regions, and so on. The other issue is the policy and kind of regulatory template language was not provided. And when I say that, I'm talking about land use plan policy language and any kind of regulatory, my favorite, zoning language. I'm always looking or on the hunt for template language. We see that a lot at the state level for general plans and zoning, but it wasn't really provided here. So just means that we have our job cut out for us, which is fine. And I'd also like to see more, or we rather, staff would like to see more details provided as far as property takings and what that fine line is as sea level kind of moves up or down and how that is determined, and really some of the insurance considerations and for private property, for public infrastructure and so on, who pays, how much, all that thing. And that may be overstepping the responsibility of the Coastal Commission, but again, I'm looking for good answers. So on that note, what we'd like to also see is really a clear path or decision-making process for how Coastal Commission comes to their determinations for hard solutions versus soft solutions. So hard solutions are, you know, what are called gray or engineering, which could be seawalls or abutments, you know, stuff like that, rebar, versus green natural solutions, which are like sandbars, vegetation, other means of going of you know, addressing sea level. A good example of that would be recently with Goleta Beach. The Coastal Commission put a lot of, you know, many years of examining whether we do a seawall, we don't wall, and put the county through a considerable amount of time and effort. Whereas just earlier that morning, they approved a seawall for a private residence within 30 minutes. So for us as staff, it would be nice to get an understanding of where Coastal Commission and their staff is coming from in terms of decision-making process for hard versus soft solutions. Then that helps us do our job better as well. But on a positive note, I'd like to close that I really do think the new legal and the environmental justice, which is the socially vulnerable population chapters, are very helpful and really provide a better context as to the role of the Coastal Commission and local governments in looking at sea level rise and so on across the state. And just stop me anytime if you have any questions. So again, great document, and I'm really glad to see that it's moving forward, and I hope we get some closure later this year, as I'm sure Coastal Commission staff does too. Moving on to our grant, at the last council hearing, which was May 19th, I believe, we came just on consent agenda to revise the grant schedule. This was actually at the request of the Coastal Commission, their staff. And so we agreed, because obviously we want to work hand in hand with them, and it was adopted. And so consequently, the grant schedule, which is technically a contract, was extended from the original date, which was April 30th, which I know I've been hammering you guys or reminding you of, to October 31st. So essentially a six-month extension in timing. And that was really to add additional time for consultation. And so consultation actually was really the purpose and goal of this whole grant. Typically, most jurisdictions, they write up their land use plan, their implementation plan, which is your zoning, package it all up and you give it to Coastal Commission, and then they do something with it and then send it back with a lot of comments, and it starts really the review process, which sometimes is not a pretty process. So the goal of these grants was really to say, you know, that may not be the best way of doing that. Why don't we have more of an iterative consultation, kind of one-on-one, so that city staff and Coastal Commission staff are communicating on, well, what about this policy and that, and really talking about it, and just be more collaborative in general, which I think is good planning. So in order to do that, we needed some additional time on their end and so on. So, but I'm happy to say it's going actually very well. And I feel like we have a really collaborative relationship. In fact, we can call each other anytime, and just it's actually going really well. So I'm happy. So that ends next year, which I should have put the 16th, and I didn't catch that. So ignore that. But it's actually 2016. So I can't even believe it's almost July already. So moving on. Oh, so let's talk about the actual consultation and what has happened so far. So Coastal Commission staff has already provided us helpful feedback on our ESHA policies, public access and rec, which are very important to Coastal Commission, oil and gas, or otherwise known as energy, and transportation land use policies. So again, the land use plan policies would be taken from our general plan. And most of them were, as they're already written, from our 2006. As you might remember, in my previous presentations, most of the revisions to our policies were done to address sea level rise and stuff that we just didn't know about back in 2006. So this stuff, ESHA, public access, these were already in our general plan and submitted for review. We made a few additions here and there just to bring it up to snuff per the Coastal Act, but it's a really good process. So we've gotten comments, and we're preparing our responses to those comments as we speak. Additionally, we've gotten comments back on our public access and transportation maps, so we are looking to that, and we'll provide our responses to them, and it'll all be recorded just in case if anyone asks. And additionally, I will say the Coastal Commission engineer provided some very helpful feedback on our sea level rise vulnerability assessment scope of work with Revel Coastal. I thought, you know, if they're going to be reviewing all this work, you might as well check if they like the approach. And so I think that was the first time they'd ever received that, and they found that extremely helpful and very collaborative, got great feedback, and then that informed the contract, which I'll talk about just shortly. And they also provided really helpful policies, given their recent work with Marin County and some other jurisdictions, just to kind of help us along. So now let's get to the exciting stuff, the sea level rise coastal hazard modeling. We're finishing up the hazard modeling as we speak. In fact, I just got the email that we should be getting the updated coastal hazards this Wednesday from the county. It's a countywide process, you know, that we're participating in. So that will be broken down by, let's see, coastal erosion, coastal storm flooding, wave impacts, tidal inundation, bar-built lagoon flooding. All really exciting stuff in GIS. So, of course, we'll have that broken out spatially. So now is the time for GLETA to do what's called a vulnerability assessment. So now we know where the hazards are, but now we have to figure out where our infrastructure is located, where our different sensitive coastal resources, you know, ESHAs and so on, and our people, you know, socioeconomic. And so we are in a massive data collection effort to get all that information from Goleta Water District, Sanitation District, County Fire, the county assessors, I mean, everything. I'm collecting it so that we have a template for all our vulnerable infrastructure, resources, and people. From there, our consultant, I'm not going to do this, will do a vulnerability assessment to see what's, you know, in the hazard zone and so on at different planning horizons. So near term, I think, will be really fascinating because 2030 is not that far out. Midterm, 2060, and then long term, 2100. I don't know where we'll be then, but it'll be good to know. So then you actually want to look at it again at different scenarios, low, medium, high. So low would be considered if nothing really changed, you know, it will say business as usual. Medium, which is probably most likely what will happen, and then high is worst case. Oh my goodness. So, but it's always good to know that. And these are all consistent with best available science, modeling, and the Coastal Commission guidance. So we're going to break it out according to three sectors. It'll be either infrastructure, coastal resources, which is the environment, and people, different socioeconomic classes. And then we're going to summarize them by different sub-areas. So some of these sub-areas may look familiar, like Old Town. This is taken from our general plan figure 1.2. It's just a good way to kind of group different sectors so that we can look at, well, how's Old Town going to be affected? Because that'll be different than what happens to, say, coastal resource area where Bacara is. So it's, you know, good to also not only know the sectors, but the sub-areas. Then from there, once we have those results, we can then really start looking at adaptation planning with a range of possible measures for each of those sectors and possible consequences. And then our consultant will recommend, in conjunction with staff and Coastal Commission, a suite of measures that will all formulate into probably a defined set of adaptation strategies. I like to keep it around 5 or 6, but making sure we don't lead to any kind of maladaptation. And maladaptation, if you don't know what that is, it's adaptation is a positive thing. It's adapting to changing circumstances. Maladaptation is you change, but it actually makes things worse. So you don't want to do that. So something to keep in mind when you start looking at adaptation strategies. So, based off some feedback I think we got from Planning Commission or Council, I can't recall, it was, well, how much is this all going to cost? You know, what are the impacts fiscally? Which is actually a great question. So I went back to our consultant and said, well, let's look at this. It's one thing to understand, okay, here are the hazards, here are the vulnerable infrastructure, but what are some of the costs? So we are moving forward with a fiscal impact analysis. We're going to use this analysis to inform our adaptation strategies. So right now, in conjunction with the county, we're gathering all the parcel information, and we're updating their database to better reflect what's called fair market property value, including government property. And then from there, again, this is after we get the vulnerability study done, our consultant team, which will include an economist, will estimate the loss in property value from erosion and damage from flooding, as well as estimate the loss in economic activity due to that coastal storm and erosion. So that will be two ways, loss of jobs and then total revenue, so which is transit occupancy, sales, and business taxes. So this is why we brought on an economist to help us figure all this out. I'm really excited to see some of the results from this. We're starting to see the results from some other fiscal impact analysis down in San Diego, as well as Monterey County. So it'd be interesting to compare results of what kind of scale are we looking at? Is it only, say, 10,000? Is it a million? It'd be helpful to know that. So when this, you know, Chamber of Commerce asks me or others, I'll be able to actually give them an answer. So in terms of next steps, like I mentioned, we're wrapping up our hazard mapping, and then we're going to start our vulnerability assessment, actually in July. And then we're going to do some internal working group meetings with planning, public works, neighborhood services, and county fire, because we need to make sure we're all consistent internally. Then we'll do the fiscal impact analysis in August, per se. And then we will come back to you and City Council to give you a briefing, just to make sure we're on the right path and we're kind of, you know, given this work, we want to make sure we're giving you the type of metric results that makes sense and can be, you know, understood and are useful for decision making. Once we do that, we'll get your input, we'll make some revisions, and then we hope to come back with some draft findings to both Planning Commission and to City Council in the fall, because we need to wrap up our regulations and our new hazards chapter, which I'm really excited about, for our zoning code by this fall per our grant schedule. We need to have that done by like November, December to stay on schedule. I'd also like to mention that we've been given the opportunity to provide input on the county's update to their multi-hazard mitigation plan, which is, this is just, I could not have asked for more perfect timing to take all this hazard modeling, vulnerability, fiscal impact, and plug that into the county's plan, and it's just going to be great. Really, it's going to look really good. So I'm really excited for that opportunity as well. So that's what we've been working on right now. So I just wanted to see if you had any questions about the schedules in terms of what we're doing with our consultants or with Coastal Commissioning or the draft guidance. Any thoughts on reporting metrics? And when I say reporting metrics, right now we're looking at, in terms of infrastructure, to give you an example, would be like miles of streets impacted or, you know, sewer pipes, or different socioeconomic classes. Infrastructure would be, you know, acres of habitat broken down by species, stuff like that. But if there's anything in particular, please let me know. Any recommendations or any thoughts you have? And then lastly, I'd like to close with two links. First, to the Coastal Commission draft guidance document. It's right there. And then to Marin County's recent local coastal program that was just heard in April at Coastal Commission. And they have the most recent, we would say, analysis approach of sea level rise. It's actually really fascinating, and a lot of us, it's some good work there in terms of that template language I was talking about. Not that we're going to copy and paste, but it's always good to see what other jurisdictions are doing and also what Coastal Commission is accepting as good examples. So if you're curious, you could go to their website as well. And I'll stop there. So thank you again for this opportunity to brief you on all the exciting work we're doing, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
And Chair, if I might add in that closing, that one of the nice things about our LCP is the size of our city and the shape of it, because it's not so large that we can't wrap our hands around all of these issues. And some of the bigger cities or counties, it's just the scope and scale of doing something at this level is a little bit out of reach. Some are continuing. We're coordinating and collaborating. That's like 50% of all of this is, you know, trying to work with our partners to try to stay consistent where we can, and then understand the science as it progresses. I mean, there's scientists that are studying things like, you know, the warming of the southern portions of the ocean and how that's altering currents and things like that, and all that stuff. This stuff is coming, like, you know, fresh, hot, and it is affecting the way we're looking at sea level rise in the models. So, but for us, our city, we can actually do a good job of addressing and having a better set of regulatory tools, or even just better understanding what our future might look like. And so anyway, that's part of when you see us excited. It's because we feel really lucky that we can actually really get down and do a thorough job. The way our city is, you know, we don't touch the coastline for the whole influence area. So we're also looking at not just what's in the coastal zone. So instead of looking at this really myopically, just simple, like what's in the coastal zone, let's just think about sea level rise there and that's it. Well, that doesn't really make sense, because if we're really intending on looking at sea level rise, we want to see what is it, not stop it at a line in the sand. So we're looking at it for our whole system instead. So that means like portions of Old Town are not in the coastal zone. Yet that's where many of our vulnerable assets are. And there's a lot of creeks that go through there. And then there's a lot of interplay with the city of Santa Barbara, the airport, and then the county. So that's why this collaboration is so critical, because what they do will affect us because we're upstream from them, and or what they don't do will affect us. So we're working with them, and I think it's going to be a really good thing, because, you know, some preliminary things that we see have some influence, but we have things we can do that, mm-hmm. and that's why that fiscal analysis is so important, because it helps us when we do ultimately come back with strategies. You can see it like in the climate adaptation plan way of, you know, scope and scale of actions and what those actions might cost and what might those benefits be in dollars too. So we're not just looking at it from an environmental or health and safety, but also economic losses and gains. And then let's see, I wanted to also say that so we're not just looking at the coastal zone. We're looking at the actual influence of sea level rise. And then something that we really haven't talked a lot about, but we will be, because it's in our long-term approach to how we're looking at sea level rise, is what's coming down the systems. Really, we're all this is focused on is what's coming up. But what we're learning is sea level rise has an effect with our fluvial system. So what water, what sediments come down interplay with the surges and the wave heights and all of those things. So that's going to be another step that we're going to take, is looking at how those two things meet and what happens when that. So we're trying to get a comprehensive approach so that we are ahead of the impact, the future impact or likely impact, as opposed to riding either with it or after. So those are some of the things that are coming. But again, this, as that science keeps unfolding and they learn more, we're learning more. So we'll be doing some things that will continue to be updated as we gather and the science evolves. Thank you.
Actually, if I could just add to that. Thank you so much, Anne, for reminding me. So when we were talking about the coastal hazards, Anne's correct. It does not, and I apologize, I should have clarified. It does not include what's called fluvial flooding. So it's the stuff coming down, but we're hoping in the future, as budgets and so on come together, that is something we can include and look at. So we'll be coming back on that one. But just know it doesn't have that, but we're still doing a great job by looking at all those other hazards. The other issue to what Anne just said is, yes, this is citywide, which I think is great, because the coastal zone is an artificial boundary. Although important, it is just artificial. We believe that it's better to look at the whole city so that when you're looking at your hazard map, it's a complete picture. And in addition to the sea level, we are also looking at precipitation and the drought, because water availability, water supply. So we'll be looking at that and working with Goleta Water District on that, as well as fire. We already have some great resources from the Community Wildfire Protection Plan that was mapped in 2012. And so we'll be taking that and looking at fire and some of the more updated policies, citywide, like in Elwood and other places. So I wanted to say it's not just sea level. That's why I wrote climate-induced hazards. It's drought, fire, sea level rise, all that kind of stuff. So, but the cool thing is we're going to map it and we're going to figure it out and come up with some strategies. So. All right. That's it now.
Well, thank you, Ms. Wells. Ms. Slavin?
Chair?
Hold on just a minute.
Okay.
Before we move on to the commission, I just wanted to let the public that may be watching know, we would normally invite the public to make comments during this presentation or after this presentation. We have what appears to be no one here to make comments, so I am going to make the assumption, Madam Clerk, is it correct we have no speaker slips on this item?
That's correct, Chair.
Okay. So the public input portion, we're going right over that one, and we're coming back to the commission. Mr. Daniels.
Thank you, sir. I've got a couple questions. They're minor, and I just want to make sure, because I'm thinking of timing in two aspects. In your modeling, you talk about 2030 short term, 2060 as your midterm. I noticed in the draft commission, coastal commission draft, that they have different modeling years, and I'm just wondering if you guys have actually landed on these or. Are they real is my point.
Yes, we decided these in conjunction with the county's effort, since we're part of what's called the County of Santa Barbara Resiliency Project. It was funded through the Coastal Conservancy, which is the nonprofit arm of Coastal Commission. It was decided a few years ago when all the cities, county came together, they selected those dates. Based on best available science and a variety of other issues. 2030 was picked because that's usually the end date for so many general plans as far as build out. So, and it's something tangible versus say, sometimes you see 2050, 2080, and 2100. The county and others chose to go with closer dates. So to be more realistic in terms of planning, because it's It's already so hard to plan out to 2030, much less any further. So we do have that flexibility in choosing the dates. The goal for anything is always to achieve consistency. So we felt that it'd be consistent with the county and the cities of Santa Barbara to have the same dates.
Thank you. The other thing I wanted to talk about was you guys getting a extension on your ability to what it says in number two, the amendment for the LCP grant from April to October. Is October a time where you get it reviewed or get it certified?
It's the time when we must submit the complete local coastal program, both land use and implementation. Mm-hmm. Certification is further down the process, because once you submit it, then Coastal Commission, they then it starts their actual like clock. Yeah. From a regulatory right. standpoint. Mm-hmm. To then take it to Coastal Commission and provide a staff report, and kind of like what we'd have to do here. So it okay. starts that clock.
Okay, so it'll be and is this the first time you will have done that, or?
Yes, for Goleta.
For Goleta.
Yes.
Okay. So.
I want to. So the theory is behind not submitting an application right now, and instead waiting after consultation through this grant process, is that what we will submit, they will be more familiar with, and they'll understand, you know, our policies and regulatory programs, so that their review will go quicker, smoother, with less negative or criticism of the process because of that collaboration that occurred for the 18 months or 2 years prior to that. Because it does take, you know, years. It can be many years, as you know. To get a certified LCP. So we'll see. We're part of this first wave of cities to get this grant, and so we'll see if this works out. But our experience so far has been that it has been a very helpful process, and when they understand why we have, you know, policies that we have and where, and they're just getting more familiar with our city. And so just that alone is a huge step in a more collaborative approach to our LCP.
I understand. Thank you.
I was just going to say, I think, the great part about this is when they see our submittal, nothing will be a surprise. They will have hopefully already seen everything. Mm-hmm. And they'll know why we agreed or didn't or so on. So nothing will be a surprise.
It would be very similar to an applicant coming to the city and going through the pre-application process and mm-hmm. working with staff on their application. So by the time it does go to Planning Commission, everyone's very familiar with it. We know the ins and outs of the application, and there are no questions from our side at that point. Mm-hmm. And it makes it easier to explain to you.
Mm. It's a positive experience, hopefully.
Thank you.
Commissioner Rayner, do you have anything?
Thank you, Chair Onan. You had mentioned that they provided some suggested climate adaptation policies. What are some of the ones that you learned about that you're interested in bringing here?
In terms of the strategies, I would, that's a good question. I would say probably the most interesting one was their transfer of development rights mm-hmm. strategy. That would be something I would be very interested in promoting here. It's not my decision to make, but mm-hmm. I could write the policy language suggestions and so on, you know, for the decision makers to mm-hmm. to consider. I would say that would be one of the more interesting, more fleshed out strategies from the last version to this version, only mm-hmm. because there's been more examples of that and more practice across the state.
And a lot of that communication has been theoretical because mm-hmm. we haven't done our vulnerability study, or we don't have our sea level rise mapping done. Mm-hmm. So these are kind of theoretical conversations where they're giving us some samples of what they used mm-hmm. elsewhere. We do have a policy in our general plan for TDRs. Mm-hmm. So that the timing is good because we're doing our zoning. Mm-hmm. So all of these things are fluid, but until we have our mapping done and our vulnerability assessment done, we'll be able to really look at the effects of those mm-hmm. strategies and the benefits of those strategies.
Okay. I also, you had talked about the low, medium, and high scenarios. And I know there's a lot of competing ideas out there, but I was surprised that the low scenario was no change.
I would say little change.
Okay.
It assumes that there's little change occurring with sea level rise, but then, you know, it's being very conservative. Mm-hmm. But it is a requirement because mm-hmm. if things don't change, mm-hmm. it's good to know that too. We don't want to be overly concerned, mm-hmm. just assume the worst case scenario. It's always good to have that as a basis, almost like a threshold. And if you actually look in the guidance, it only recommends using a low and high, mm-hmm. but we included a medium mm-hmm. because we, not the royal we, but the consultants and the team and the county all agreed that it would be better for planning purposes mm-hmm. of kind of a middle ground.
And is the medium based on IPCC? Or?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yes, yes. And not the NRDC. Oh, dear. There's the study that they referred to, the 2012 study, okay. that just left my mind right now, that it's based off that.
Okay.
Sometimes too many acronyms.
I was very excited to see that you added the fiscal impact analysis. I think
oh,
that's
good.
Wonderful.
Thanks. Yeah.
And I'm also thinking you had talked about how some communities are more vulnerable and the different demographics of our community mm-hmm. as well. And so I'm curious if there would also be some analysis of looking at economic impacts in comparison with incomes in that area or in comparison with the... Like, what's the percentage of the total value of that home that would mm-hmm. be lost?
Mm-hmm. That's actually really fascinating. We're downloading right now mm-hmm. what's called SOVI Index, mm-hmm. which is the Socially Vulnerable Index. It was done on a national scale. Mm-hmm. So we're taking that combined with, you know, our census data combined with this updated assessor's database and comparing the results and seeing if we need to fine-tune certain particular neighborhoods at a value.
Okay.
And we're just waiting for it's at the end of the tax dolls, so we should have the updated assessor's database from this past year mm-hmm. starting July, and then we can then update it and compare it to the SOFI. So yes, that is a huge consideration. That's why people, I couldn't come up with a better name for this sector, but within that is renter versus owner, socially vulnerable populations. You can download, you know, where community cooling centers, you know, so all of this information is great. It's all in GIS. And we're tracking that in a spreadsheet to make sure we have all this data. So it's really fascinating.
And then, sorry, last questions. So you had asked about reporting metrics and things that we'd be
yes.
interested in.
Yes.
So will you look at the salinity change and the effect that this will have on biodiversity in our creeks and watersheds as well?
As I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, we're not doing fluvial flooding at
okay.
this stage. I can ask our consultant to see, I don't think that we're looking at that. That would be more of a hydraulic kind of modeling fluvial flooding, but mm-hmm. I could be wrong. So let me ask. So again, it is.
I'd be interested in really thinking about the ecosystem impacts because as the sea level rises, it won't just be the coastline that's affected
yeah.
as much as it's really going to be our creeks and the wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking at salinity change and biodiversity in the creeks and wetlands.
Okay.
So just be curious to see to the extent that that could be affected.
Okay.
And there is a study in Virgulita Slough
okay.
that it is not people-based and not so much infrastructure-based. It's really habitat-based. So it's
mm-hmm.
it's looking at how sea level rise will influence the mm-hmm. migration of habitats where mm-hmm. salinity is affected. And so they are looking at that and looking at mm-hmm. Different strategies to
mm-hmm.
help or not
mm-hmm.
the change because it is an artificial system and because
mm-hmm.
there is development and there's roads and pipelines
mm-hmm.
and levees and airports and all those things. What happens to that change and where might those, what types of habitats would we lose
mm-hmm.
And if we lose those habitats, what would that, how will that affect us, not just from an ecological perspective, but let's say the salinity is more brackish, and so now mm-hmm. we no longer have mm-hmm. like the halibut nursery mm-hmm. in the slough that populates our oceans mm-hmm. with halibut, which would affect fisheries. So they are looking at the habitat system changes, and it's like, talk about an evolving science. So I think that they're kind of coming out mm-hmm. first with this this model, mm-hmm. and it will help inform the science, but it's kind of a little bit lagging mm-hmm. Behind. Plus, it's very different at each location. I think mm-hmm. Hayward spent a lot of time with this, mm-hmm. And because of the, even like for mm-hmm. ducks and different species that mm-hmm. have an economic value as well as a ecosystem value, mm-hmm. and they really spent time quantifying that. And this was, they did this, I think, 5 years ago. So they were way ahead of the curve on that. And they, mm-hmm. they started some of their strategies like rolling easements, mm-hmm. Trying to get their water mm-hmm. plants out of those wetlands, but keeping that and then helping that habitat mm-hmm. With some small levees to try to keep some of the fresh water. And then they were looking at different parcels to buy up that were going to be affected because they have so much low-lying land there. So we're watching all this stuff, and mm-hmm. but Goleta Slough is not in the city, and nor is Devereaux Slough, so we don't have as much mm-hmm. control over those coastal portions.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to provide. So that study that Anne's referring to is still being finalized. Mm-hmm. Supposedly the final comes out mm-hmm. next month. I remember it's a DUDEC study. So when I come back for my briefing, I'll put together a list of other kind of locally relevant studies. There's an inlet study, the habitat study that are being finalized, and I'll put that together just as a briefing. Again, back to our stuff, it's more of looking at it from a hazard perspective and a vulnerability, fiscal impact, not to downplay the ecosystem, but as Anne pointed out, that's not in our jurisdiction, but it's something I would like to look at with fluvial flooding. So I'll keep bringing that up occasionally. So thank you. I'll put together that list of other relevant studies, though.
Thank you for looking into that. The main slough isn't in the city. Some of the creeks that would still yes. be affected by this are. And yes. I know that was something that was really emphasized in our general plan.
Yeah, so I agree.
I want to keep that, too.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my comments.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Slavin, I'm just a little confused as far as the process.
Okay.
You guys have been working, collaborating with scientists, and you've been collaborating with other jurisdictions, the county, you've been looking at other communities. You're putting together a draft, okay? When does the public get involved in the scrutiny of that process?
That's a great question. We'll have a draft, according to my schedule, to you guys in about September-ish, assuming everything goes well, because we need to have our policies and our IP language ironed out in the fall. We will have internal discussions as to the best timing to roll that out. Either we roll it out this fall as kind of a standalone work product, because it will be its own standalone report, which will be considered like a background report for the land use plan, or we could choose to wait till the public review process, the official public review process for the overall LCP, which would be next spring. So I would need to have that discussion. But when I come back and brief you, I will have a better answer for you as to if we should do it as a standalone or overall. I guess I would ask, what would you recommend? Would you like the public to be more involved early on as a standalone report or part of the overall LCP?
Well, I'm not sure I'm the best one to answer okay. that, but the when you present it to the public eventually, mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. it going to be presented as, this is a lot of empirical evidence that is, you can't refute it, or is there going to be open, is this body of information going to be subject mm-hmm. to analysis, or say the Chamber of Commerce wanting to analyze things or offer, or the Environmental Defense Center wanting to review things and offer analysis mm-hmm. from a different perspective. How, how's the process going to, you know, shake out?
Transparent, yeah.
So everything that we're doing is going to go to the public. So even the hard science stuff, it doesn't necessarily mean that we might remodel something, but if there is, you know, someone exposes some weakness, then it's something that we will acknowledge and then and relook at. But yeah, everything will go to the public. And the similar with, you know, we've been working on the Goleta Slough study, because we're on the committee as members, I guess. It's not a Brown Act committee, but and it's been, I think, maybe 6 years, 7 years of this. So the public can come to those meetings, but once they unveil it next month as the work in progress, as a draft, then it will undergo a whole level of public review. So sometimes as we're working on that, maybe similar to here, it seems like, you know, it's quiet with the public, but it's because we're trying to, we've got 20 scientists and planners and engineers in a room, and we're trying to get the best thing we can produce that makes the most sense so that we can put it out on the streets and then start our public dialogue. So yes, there will be ample time for the public. It's built into our grant contract as mm-hmm. well.
Actually, and this is a perfect time for me to put in a plug for our website again. We already have the backshore characterization analysis up there, so I highly recommend just go to our website. I'm updating it probably, I'm looking for Wendy, but almost weekly of just stuff I'm finding. It's probably getting a little long, but so please go there. It's there, and then as soon as I'm going to put the GIS tracking spreadsheet, so you'll see all the sectors and what we collected in it, and then the vulnerability assessment. So I'd say every month we're going to put stuff, because I would love other people's input and, you know, review and recommendations, because I think it only makes the product better and bolsters it. And then same with the fiscal impact analysis, that'll be put up. So these will be mini studies, which will come together and form the final report, which is actually a deliverable to the Coastal Commission. So not only will it be on our website in public and come to you guys, of course, it'll be transmitted to Coastal Commission staff as well. So I'm a firm believer in transparency. Yeah.
Commissioner Fuller?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for a great presentation. And also, it's good to hear that you're planning on making studies available, even in mini as they become, as they're done. I think that's terrific. I really do. I think as soon as a draft is available, it should be made available to the public.
Yeah.
The more time the public has to look at, review, and analyze this information, the better. The better job they can do of giving input to their community. I think that's great. You mentioned about the Revel consulting contract. Is there a change in scope or?
No. So on May 19th, we added in the vulnerability assessment, which council approved, not you guys, council. And then I'm coming back. I just forgot to change the date, so that's what next Tuesday is.
So that's the main change in this contract? Yeah.
Well, so it was changed on May 19th, and then when we passed the budget for the next two fiscal mm-hmm. years, it includes another allocation mm-hmm. for further, more in-depth analyses of the adaptation strategies. Takes it to the next level. Anyway, so that's what we're talking about, where the scope is. We're getting city council support to put more effort into making sure that we have accurate inputs and that our analysis, the range of the analyses are appropriate for our community so that we can have some informed policies.
So he'll be providing analysis for the adaptation strategies?
Oh, yes. Good. And he'll be at the next presentation.
Okay.
You guys got to hammer him with some questions. So the one that went just on consent May 19th was to provide funding for the vulnerability assessment, which is what we're cranking on right now, and partial adaptation. Then the next allocation of this new budget is to pay for the fiscal impact analysis, because economists are not cheap. and as I'm realizing, and to finish the adaptation strategies, as well as to actually help me, author some of the policy and implementation language. So yeah, I'm definitely taking advantage of him. So, and he already has in his calendar both briefings with Planning Commission and Council for later this summer. So for technical questions and so forth.
Economists usually know the value of a dollar.
Oh yeah, and this guy's good. But so we're fortunate we got budget for this next year to do this. So that's what allowed for the fiscal impact.
And personally, I just want to urge you to put whatever portions of studies as they're completed, you know, up on the website.
I will.
To make them
Thank
available.
You.
That'd be really good.
Oh, I love it. I mean, we put these up and everything we find. So I would love any input you have on the website, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
So I have just a couple questions to make sure I understand. So we'll be submitting the end of October this year.
No. We just need to wrap up our land use plan. So that's the policy general plan portion. We do need to have it submitted, revisions, everything from all this consultation, all the work that Revelle Coastal and we're doing with Coastal Commission. It does need to be wrapped up by November so that we can move forward with the zoning, which is called the implementation plan. And so we're going to start the consultation period December 1st through about April 30th of next year, and that's the back and forth. So we've been in the back and forth with just policies, then we get to move on to zoning, so for the holidays and all of that. So, and then that starts the public review process. So does that answer your question? I feel like it didn't. And I apologize, maybe I had a slide on this.
Let me clear up. Was your question about the application for certification? That would be in October 2016.
I apologize. On there, I had 2015. So, see, I'm texting you guys to make sure you're paying attention. And so, yes, you caught me. So, it's due October 31st, 2016.
Okay.
Next year.
And our hazard vulnerability will be
done this year. Yeah,
done this October. Year.
Yes, because it feeds in. It's a background report, just like we did an infrastructure capacity build-out study, which is on the website. Those all feed in to our land use plan. So we need to have all our studies, all our technical studies, Task 2, all done. No more studies. We've got to be done. And we've got to write the policy language and write the zoning language because we need to keep on schedule. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Yeah, so.
All right. Any other questions from the commission? Okay, so I think we've wrapped up that presentation. Let's go to our planning director and see if we got a director's report.
A brief one. Our next agenda will be in the end of July, and we'll be doing, hopefully, Old Town Village, which is the page site project in Old Town. That'll be coming to you as an M&D and then staff report resolutions and everything else. We will get that out to you as soon as we can. The M&D is already out for circulation. The comment period closed 2 weeks ago,
a week ago Friday.
So right now staff is going through comments and getting ready to turn that around. And that is primarily what determines how quickly we can get it out to you. For final, it'll be at least 10 days prior to the meeting. The only other thing I have to report is the State Lands Commission is holding a public scoping meeting on their Venico South Elwood Field project. They released an NOP, and this is the official meeting to discuss it or give comment. This is Wednesday at our community center. There are two meeting periods, 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock, and this is State Lands Commission staff coming to do this hearing. The deadline for comments is June 29th, which is next week. And so if anyone has comments on this, I do encourage those to get those in if you haven't already, or come to the hearing to give them verbally. And this is on expansion of their South Elwood field, the full field development that they've been talking about. We also have sent out two emails to the Planning Commission regarding trainings that are coming up. We'd like to get responses from folks. Just a friendly reminder, if you can get back to Wendy on that. And I could, if you know today, you can tell me after the meeting, but it's probably best to get back to Wendy so she can actually track who's going. I think a couple of you have, or one, at least one of you has, and but the other four, get to it, or else we'll send another reminder. And that's really all I have for this evening.
All right. Commissioners, any comments or from the commissioners? Commissioner Maynard? Commissioner Fuller?
Good.
Commissioner Jenkins? Commissioner Daniels?
Thank you, Chair. I noticed that in October 12th, we had a Planning Commission meeting, and I think that's Columbus Day again. And I think I brought this up last year. It doesn't matter to me, you know. It doesn't affect me, but it might affect other people, and I'm considering the public now who have taken a long weekend. And so I don't know. I mean, is Columbus Day a thing anymore? Or,
are city offices closed in Columbus Day?
No.
And it sounds like we go as normal.
As we're fleshing out the calendar for fall, we will certainly take a look at that. If there's any opportunity to cancel that meeting, we will.
Okay. A question for our planning director.
Yes.
Is there a hearing coming up on the, I think the terminology is the peaker plant that Edison is proposing up here in the foothills of Goleta? Yeah.
That's a county project, so their peaker facility, and we have our eyes, we're watching that one as we do anything related to something close to our borders or something that's significant, like could affect the supply of electricity, et cetera. So we don't have, there's nothing on the horizon that has been noticed, so, but we'll keep you posted on peaker facility.
Somewhere I got some information that suggests there's going to be a hearing on that coming up sometime this summer.
Yeah, there is a proposal.
And this is of obviously great interest to Goleta, whatever side, but it has significant potential impacts, both good and bad, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that would be something that I think the city should keep the citizens informed on and the Planning Commission. If possible. So that was a note of interest. Other than that, I don't have any other comments. So with that, do I have a motion to adjourn? It's always one of the tougher motions to get from this group.
So moved.
We have a first.
It was second.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those in favor say aye.